In a cloudy night sky, an iron shield contains the letters WB, while a banner across its center reads Warner Brothers Pictures. More words appear below, a Time Warner company. Our view passes through the shield. A title emerges from the clouds in raised metallic lettering, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Some of the letters bear claw-like ridges, and the S is shaped like a long-tailed serpent with a crested head. The title zooms by. In the fog looms a castle. Five wizards in trench coats and fedoras creep toward it, with their wands aglow. A bright white fireball suddenly incinerates them. As the smoke clears, a blonde man with an undercut hairstyle steps into view. A copy of the New York Ghost appears in the sky with the headline, Gellert Grindelwald, Dark Wizard, Strikes Again in Europe. In the Daily Prophet, the headline reads, Hogwarts School Increases Security. A moving advertisement promotes Gigglewater. More headlines, Dark Wizard Terror Threat. Wizards baffled. Is soccer the no magis Quidditch? Grindelwald attacks intensify, risking war with no magis. ICW convened for emergency talks. Beast ownership ban continues in U.S. The year 1926 appears prominently. Other headlines read, Anti-wizard sentiment on the rise, and Pickery calls for calm. Fireworks shoot from one ad into another. Variations of Where is Grindelwald flash by in different languages. The headline, Is Anyone Safe? Appears under a photo of the Statue of Liberty, which comes to life. An ocean liner cuts in front of it, the name on its side reading, Fort Elizabeth. Above deck, men, women, and children in hats and overcoats flock to the railings to look out on the city. A young man with a thick head of boyishly ruffled reddish-brown hair sits on a bench by himself with a leather suitcase at his side. As he reaches for the handle, one of the latches pops open and he snaps it back in place. He lifts the suitcase onto his lap, leaning in close.
Dougal, settle down now, please.
The lid bulges.
Won't be long.
Folding his arms across the top of the suitcase, he rubs his chin along the side of his hand. A wide view past skyscrapers shows the ocean liner gliding through New York Harbor. Wearing a blue overcoat, the man with the suitcase files off the ship down a gangplank.
Next.
A customs official checks his passport. The traveler avoids his gaze.
British, huh?
Yes.
First trip to New York?
Yes.
Anything edible in there?
No.
He clutches his lapel.
Livestock.
The latch pops open on his suitcase again.
Must get that fixed. No.
Let me take a look.
The traveler hesitates a moment before hefting his suitcase up on a table. He subtly pulls a hidden lever under the lock, and a tab pops up that reads, Muggle worthy. The customs official opens the lid and takes a look inside, then lifts his gaze to the traveler. The suitcase is neatly packed with clothing, personal items, and maps of New York City.
Welcome to New York.
Thank you.
Next.
On a long street of tenement buildings.
And it was like a wind, or like a ghost, but dark. And I saw its eyes. Shining white eyes.
Two men step through the rubble of a destroyed building.
A dark wind with eyes.
It's like a dark mass. And it dove down there, down underground.
A dark-haired man with prominent eyebrows and graying-shaved temples heads up the building's front steps. Two others join the men in the rubble.
Hey, get anything?
Dark wind, blah, blah.
Some sort of atmospheric hooey. Electrical.
Hey, you thirsty?
Nah, I'm on the wagon. Promised Martha I'd lay off. It's atmospheric.
Cracks work their way up a wall near the dark-haired man standing on the stoop. A squall roils through the pile of bricks, then tears up the street, overturning cobblestones and pushing aside parked cars. A driver's windshield shatters. Another car gets tipped on its side. A perspective from the unseen force flies up from the street and clips the corner of a building before diving for the subway. Windows shatter on the entrance kiosk. The dark-haired man frowns at the furrow plowed through the center of the road. On another bustling street, the Englishman with the suitcase gazes in wonder at the tall buildings. An open-air fire truck trundles up behind him.
This great city sparkles with the jewels of man's inventions. Movie theaters, automobiles, the world.
He distractedly bumps into a woman eating a hot dog.
So sorry. And bewitch us.
But where there is light, there is shadow, friend.
Something is stalking our city, wreaking destruction and then disappearing without a trace.
A portly man with an identical leather case squeezes past the woman eating the hot dog.
Join us, the second Salemers, in our fight.
Excuse me, doll, just trying to get to the bank.
We have to fight together for the sake of...
He trips on the Englishman's case.
So sorry, my case.
No harm done. Excuse me.
You! Friend!
The sermonizer addresses the Englishman.
What drew you to our meeting today?
Oh, I was just passing.
Are you a seeker? A seeker after truth?
A bum sleeps huddled against the cold.
I'm more of a chaser, really.
A gentleman exiting the bank flips him a coin.
Hear my words, and heed my warning. And laugh if you dare.
Tiny clawed hands pry the suitcase lid open.
Witches live among us. We have to fight together for the sake of our children, for the sake of tomorrow.
What do you say to that, friend?
He glimpses a duckbill stealing the bum's coin-filled hat, then glances down at his case. A furry black platypus-like critter stows the change in its belly pouch before scampering off. The Englishman hurries after it.
Excuse me.
He runs up the steps. The woman with the hot dog pushes through the crowd while the Englishman enters the stately marble-floored bank. A bespectacled man in a three-piece suit notices him looking around frantically and approaches him with his hands folded behind his back.
Can I help you, sir?
No, I was just waiting.
He takes a seat on a bench near the portly man with the matching leather suitcase. The hot dog woman spies on him from behind a column.
Hi.
The Englishman keeps looking around.
What brings you here?
Same as you.
You here to get a loan to open up a bakery?
Yes.
What are the odds of that?
The Englishman spots the platypus creature.
Well, may the best man win, I guess.
Excuse me.
He sprints off, leaving a large egg behind.
Hey, mister.
The portly man picks it up.
Hey, fella.
Mr. Kowalski, Mr. Bingley will see you now.
Okay.
He stuffs it in his coat pocket. The creature bites a metal buckle off a woman's shoe as the Englishman weaves through the crowd to retrieve it. Hitching rides with passersby, the creature hops from a briefcase to a gold purse. In Mr. Bingley's office, the banker reviews a business plan for a bakery. The egg shakes in Mr. Kowalski's pocket.
You're currently working in a canning factory.
That's the best I can do. I only got back in 24.
Got back?
From Europe, sir. Yeah, I was part of the expeditionary forces there.
At a teller's counter, the customer with the gold purse digs around for her money. Watching her, the Englishman gets uncomfortably close to a woman in line in front of him. He sees coins dropping to the floor underneath a bench. The platypus creature quickly gathers them back up into its belly pouch, then notices a medallion hanging from a pug's dog collar. He reaches for it. The Englishman bolts for the creature, but it escapes and scurries up to the top ledge of a gilded deposits window. Now Mr. Kowalski shows off baked goods in his case.
Mr. Kowalski.
You gotta try the Pawanchkis, okay? It's my grandmother's recipe. The orange zest just...
Mr. Kowalski, what do you propose to offer the bank as collateral?
Collateral?
Collateral.
The baker gestures to his wares.
There are machines now that can produce hundreds of donuts an hour.
I know, but they're nothing like what I can do.
The bank must be protected, Mr. Kowalski. Good day to you.
Mr. Bingley rings a bell on his desk. Behind the deposits windows, the platypus creature rides on a cart, pilfering gold coins from money bags. Mr. Kowalski exits the office. Rolling his eyes, he digs the egg from his pocket. The platypus creature gets wheeled into an elevator.
Hey, Mr. English guy, I think your egg is hatching.
The elevator doors slide shut. The hot dog woman watches as the Englishman pulls a wand from his sleeve and magically draws Mr. Kowalski to him. He apparates them into a stairwell.
What just happened?
A beak pokes out of the egg. Putting his wand in his teeth, the wizard takes it from the baker. He brings it downstairs.
Excuse me.
Through security bars, Mr. Bingley catches sight of Mr. Kowalski, who ducks out of view.
It's over there.
Outside a vault, the wizard opens his suitcase.
In you up.
Hello?
No. Everyone settle down.
Stay Dougal, don't make me come.
A twig man clings to his lapel.
Don't let me come down there.
The platypus creature squeezes magically through the closed vault door.
Absolutely not. Hello, Flora.
Crank wheels spin on the door.
Oh, so you're gonna steal the money, huh?
He rings an alarm.
Trificus totalis.
The banker goes stiff and collapses.
Mr. Bingley.
The vault door opens.
Kowalski.
The wizard dashes inside, then lets out an exasperated sigh.
Really?
Lounging in a safe deposit box, the platypus creature stuffs a gold bar into its pouch. The wizard grabs it before it can escape. As he shakes it upside down, gold, jewels, and coins come spilling out of its pouch. Kowalski looks around uneasily.
No.
The wizard tickles the creature's belly.
Look.
The stolen valuables spill out at an even faster pace. Security guards rush downstairs.
Oh, no.
The wizard grabs Kowalski.
Don't shoot!
They disapparate outside.
Right. For the last time, you pilfering pest, paws off what doesn't belong to you.
I'm awfully sorry about that.
He secures the lid on his suitcase.
What the hell was that?
Nothing that need concern you. Now, unfortunately, you have seen far too much. If you wouldn't mind, if you just stand there, this will be over in a jiffy.
Kowalski bashes him with his suitcase and runs off.
Sorry.
The wizard watches him inconspicuously bound off into the street. As the woman who was spying on him appears from around the corner, he ducks back against the wall. Catching his breath, he strides out with his suitcase in hand. As he crosses paths with the woman, she links arms with him, and they disapparate together into an alcove.
Who are you?
I'm sorry.
Who are you?
Newt's commander, and you are?
What's that thing in your case?
It's my nifter.
He reaches for her face.
So you've got something on your...
She recoils.
Why in the name of Deliverance Dane did you let that thing loose?
I didn't mean to. He's incorrigible. You see, anything shiny, he's all over the
place. Didn't mean to. You could not have chosen a worse time to let that creature loose. We're in the middle of a situation here. I'm taking you in.
Was it? Wait, taking me in where?
Magical Congress of the United States of America?
She shows an identification card.
So you work for Makuza? What are you, some kind of investigator?
At least tell me you took care of the nomads.
The what?
The nomads. No magic. The non-wizard.
Sorry, we call them muggles.
You wiped his memory, right? The nomads with the case? This is Section 3A, Mr. Commander. I'm taking you in.
She links arms with him and they disapparate. Now, a neo-Gothic skyscraper with an arched decorative terracotta entryway stretches 60 stories into the sky.
Come on.
She drags Newt toward it.
I'm sorry, but I do have things to do, actually.
Well, you'll have to rearrange them. What are you doing in New York, anyway?
I came to buy a birthday present.
And you've done that in London?
There's only one breeder of Appaloosa Puffskins in the world, and he lives in New York, so no.
I got a Section 3A.
A guard opens the door.
Hey, by the way, we don't allow the breeding of magical creatures in New York. We closed that guy down a year ago.
Inside the neo-Gothic Woolworth building, business people bustle across the marble lobby. The interior changes to a shadowy metallic decor as Newt and the investigator enter. A gigantic contraption with clock faces on each of its four sides hangs suspended in an atrium with a dial indicating a magical exposure threat level of severe unexplained activity. owls fly past a pair of iron-framed elevators with a portrait of Picquory, a regal witch with a thunderbird embroidered on her gown. A cathedral-like monument overlooks a pit that descends for over a dozen stories underground. A gilded phoenix statue turns its head to follow Newt and the investigator. People read copies of the New York Ghost with the headline, "Magical disturbances risk wizarding exposure," while an elf shines their wands for them in a woolly polishing machine. The investigator brings Newt to an elevator operated by a goblin with a suit and cane.
Hey, Goldstein!
Hey, Red.
She pushes her prisoner aboard.
Major Investigation Department.
I thought you was...
Major Investigation Department, I got a Section 3A.
With his cane, Red punches a control. Now, a moving picture on the newspaper shows photographers taking snapshots of the street rubble.
The International Confederation is threatening to send a delegation. They think this is related to Grindelwald's attacks in Europe.
I was there. This is a beast. No human could do what this thing is capable of, Madam President.
Whatever it is, one thing is clear. It must be stopped. It's terrorizing nomadges. And when nomadges are afraid, they attack. This could mean exposure. It could mean war.
The group turns to see Goldstein escorting Newt inside. President Picquory and the dark-haired man with the shaved temples approach them.
I made your position here quite clear, Miss Goldstein.
Yes, Madam President, but
you're no longer an Auror.
No. Madam President, but the...
Goldstein.
There's been
well,
a
this mind... office is currently concerned with very major incidents. Get out.
Yes, ma'am.
She promptly spirits Newt away. The dark-haired man screws his mouth to one side as he watches them go. An elevator takes them even deeper underground to a cavernous vacant work area where office tasks are being carried out magically on their own. An origami rat scurries out of a pneumatic tube into an inbox and unfolds into a memo. Two other origami rats get into a fight, tearing each other to shreds. Newt ducks under a sign reading, "Wand Permit Office."
So you got your wand permit? All foreigners have to have them in New York.
I made a postal application weeks ago.
Using a quill pen, Goldstein makes a notation on a clipboard.
Scamander. And you were just in Equatorial Guinea?
And I've just completed a year in the fields. I'm writing a book about magical creatures.
Like an extermination guide?
No, a guide to help people understand why we should be protecting these creatures instead of killing them.
Goldstein? Where is she? Where is she? Goldstein!
She hides behind her desk.
Goldstein?
She peeks back up.
Did you just butt in on the investigative team again?
She primly puts her quill back on her desk and faces him squarely.
Where have you been?
What?
Where'd she pick you up?
Me.
Goldstein subtly shakes her head.
Have you been tracking them Sacred Salemers again?
Of course not, sir.
The dark-haired man walks in.
Afternoon, Mr. Graves, sir.
Afternoon, Abernathy.
Mr. Graves, sir, this is Mr. Scamander. He has a crazy creature in that case, and it got out and caused mayhem in a bank.
Let's see the little guy.
She grabs the Englishman's suitcase. Newt starts to protest, but Graves cuts him off by holding up a hand and shaking his head. Goldstein places the suitcase on a low bookshelf. In one quick motion, she throws open the lid. The suitcase is filled with compartments of various baked goods. Newt's face falls as he looks inside. Graves shoots a cold look at Goldstein as he steps away.
Tina.
Elsewhere, Kowalski glances warily over his shoulder as he carries the other suitcase down a crowded sidewalk. Automobiles and horse-drawn carts cross an intersection up ahead. Finding no one following him, Kowalski yields a relieved smirk. Later, he drops the suitcase on a small bed and cocks his head pathetically.
Sorry, Grandma.
An old woman's photo hangs on the wall. Kowalski sits down heavily, facing an interior window, and drops his face into his hands. As the latch pops open on the suitcase, he glances back at it, then sits down across from it on the bed. The other latch pops open. Kowalski sits frozen. He gets up and backs away against the wall as the suitcase jolts on the bed. Kowalski inches closer to it. A piggish creature leaps out into his hands, its back coated in mop-like growths resembling a sea anemone. Something invisible smashes into the ceiling and swings on a light cord through a window. The creature in Kowalski's hands chomps at his neck. An entire wall gets demolished. Elsewhere, a girl plays hopscotch.
My mommy, your mama, gonna catch a witch. My mommy, your mama, flying on a switch.
Pamphlets on a table proclaim, witches live among us, and join the new Salemers army. A tapestry depicts a pair of hands snapping a wand over a large fire. As a pigeon roosts on a high window, a strange young man with a bowl haircut walks up below and claps his hands. The bird takes off. A young lady in a black overcoat opens one of the front doors of their old church house and rings a bell out to a city street.
Witch number 3, gonna watch her burn. Witch number 4, flogging, take your turn.
Grubby-looking children rush inside past the chanting girl and crowd around a table where soup is being served.
Collect your leaflets before you get food, children.
The bell ringer distributes a handful of leaflets to each child. Wearing an ill-fitted corduroy suit, the young man with the bowl cut ladles out soup. A boy waits meekly at the front of the line. From behind the serving table, the sermonizer reaches out and thumbs at a birthmark near his temple.
Is it a witch's mark, ma'am?
No. He's okay.
The boy takes his soup and moves on. Under an elevated train track, a fat hummingbird-like bug flits around on colorful wings. Tina Goldstein and Newt walk on the street below.
I can't believe you didn't obliviate that man. If there's an inquiry, I'm finished.
So why would you be finished? I'm the one that's...
I'm not supposed to go near the second Salemers.
The bug flies right by Newt. He stops for a moment, then briskly strides onward.
What was that?
A moth, I think. Big moth.
Around the corner, they find a crowd gathered near another ruined building.
Hey, quiet down. I'm trying to get a statement.
I'm telling you, it's a gas explosion again. I ain't taking the kids back up there until it's safe.
Hey, sorry, ma'am. There ain't no smell of gas.
It weren't gas, officer. I've seen it. It was a gigantic...
Newt waves his wand.
Hippopotagus.
Gas.
Tenants evacuate the building next to the ruins. Newt slips inside. Tina sees the magical bug hovering overhead. Newt enters an apartment. He finds an entire wall missing. Outside, Tina looks around for him. Back in the apartment, Kowalski lies semi-conscious on the floor. Newt feels a bite mark on his neck.
Commander.
Tina runs upstairs. In an alley, bricks and a fire escape balcony magically repair themselves and fly back in place as Newt waves around his wand from the open wall. He quickly sits down on Kowalski's bed and peeks in his suitcase as Tina reaches their floor. She finds him in the rebuilt apartment, latching the lid shut.
It was open?
Just a smidge.
That crazy Niffler thing's on the loose again?
Might be.
Then look for it. Look! Oh, his neck's bleeding. He's hurt. Oh, wake up, Mr. Nomad.
The piggish creature jumps out, and Newt catches it.
Mercy, Lewis, what is that?
Nothing to worry about. That is a mertlap.
What else have you got in there?
You. Hello.
Easy, Mr.
Kowalski.
Newt retrieves his wand.
You can't obliviate him? We need him as a witness.
I'm sorry, you've just yelled at me the length of New York for not doing it in the first place.
He's hurt. He looks ill.
He'll be fine. Mertlap bites aren't serious.
Jacob grasps weakly at a dresser leg.
Yeah, I admit that is a slightly more severe reaction than I've seen. But if it was really serious, he'd have...
Tina stands and faces him.
What?
Well, the first symptom would be flames out of his anus.
And he doesn't seem to... balled up!
Lost 48 hours at the most. I can keep him if you want to.
Keep him? We don't keep them. Mr. Scamander, do you know anything about the wizarding community in America?
I do know a few things, actually. I know that you have rather backwards laws about relations with non-magic people. That you're not meant to befriend them, that you can't marry them, which seems mildly absurd to me.
Who's going
to
marry him?
Jacob gives a sour look.
You're both coming with me.
I don't see why I need to come with you.
Help me.
Oh, I'm dreaming, right? Yes, I'm tired. I never went to the bank.
This is all just some big nightmare, right?
For the both of us, Mr. Kowalski.
All three of them disapparate. The picture of Jacob's grandmother falls away to reveal the Niffler hiding inside the wall. Out on the street, a boy licking a red lollipop sees an apple float by and get chopped down to the core. The invisible force then steals his lollipop. On a perfume ad for Divine Magic by Lima Carniero, two big yellow eyes open over a painting of a woman's face, and a mostly invisible ape lopes off past a dog. The rest of the lollipop vanishes in one bite, and newspaper racks fall into the street. A bicyclist swerves out of the way, nearly causing a series of collisions. A woman's red hat gets yanked off her head and floats down the road, startling two police horses. An aerial view shows an impressive white building with a mansard roof. A purple tail slithers inside an open window, and a feathered wing expands rapidly inside, shaking a number of shingles loose. On the high floor of a skyscraper, people bustle around a workplace. The second Salemers follow a man out of the elevator.
And so this is the newsroom. Let's go. Hey, how are you? Make way for the bare bones. Now they're just putting the papers to bed, as they say.
The young man with the bowl cut looks around shiftily at the news desks.
Mr. Shaw, sir, he's with the senator.
Never mind that, Barker. I want to see my father.
He barges into an office.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Shaw, but
father,
your son insisted.
You're going to want to hear this.
He pulls photos from a portfolio.
I've got something huge.
Your brother and I are busy here, Langdon, working on his election campaign. We don't have time for this.
This is Mary Lou Barebone from the New Salem Preservation Society. And she's got a big story for you.
Shaw Sr. puts down a drink.
Oh, she has, has she?
The strange things going on all over the city. The people behind this, they are not like you and me. This is witchcraft, don't you see?
Langdon.
She doesn't want any money.
Then either her story is worthless or she's lying about the cost. Nobody gives away anything valuable for free, Langdon.
You're right, Mr. Shaw. What we desire is infinitely more valuable than money. It's your influence. Millions of people read your newspapers, and they need to be made aware about this danger.
The crazy disturbances in the subway. Just look at the pictures.
I'd like you and your friends to leave.
No, look, you're missing a trick here. Just look at the evidence.
Really?
Langdon, listen to Father and just go. And take the freaks with you.
This is Father's office, not yours.
Okay.
And I'm sick of this. Every time I walk
That's
in here...
It. Thank you.
Langdon rubs his eyes. Mary Lou gazes undauntedly at the Shaws.
We hope you'll reconsider, Mr. Shaw. We're not difficult to find. Until then, we thank you for your time.
The men remain unmoved. The pale young girl who played hopscotch glowers at them. As Mary Lou leads her brood out of the office, the young man with the bowl cut drops a flyer.
Hey, boy.
Senator Shaw steps forward.
You dropped something.
The young man steps back over in his ill-fitting suit.
Here you go, freak. Why don't you put that in the trash where you all belong?
Without meeting his gaze, the shy young man turns away and rejoins his group. The pale girl takes his hand. Meanwhile, Newt and Tina walk Jacob down a sidewalk.
Take a right here.
The portly baker walks with exaggerated steps. The trio pauses behind a truck marked P. Cooper and Company Removal Service.
Okay. Before we go in, I'm not supposed to have men on the premises.
In that case, Mr. Kowalski, I can easily seek other accommodation.
She tugs on Jacob.
Watch your step.
In her apartment building, they creep softly upstairs. A woman opens her door. The trio freezes.
Yes, Mrs. Esposito?
Are you alone?
Always alone, Mrs. Esposito.
They make their way into Tina's apartment. Ugh. Drying garments float onto racks near a fireplace. Jacob looks around in a stupor.
Tini, you brought men home.
A woman in a slip stands behind a door.
Gentlemen, this is my sister.
The woman bites her lip with a grin.
Want to put something on, Queenie?
Oh, sure.
With a wand, she directs a dress to fly up off a dressmaker's dummy. Jacob stands mesmerized. Queenie gracefully slips her slender arms inside the sleeves of her floating dress. Jacob's mouth drops open in a fond smile at the blonde beauty.
So? Who are they?
That's Mr. Scamander. He's committed a serious infraction of the National Statute of Secrecy.
He's a criminal?
Uh-huh. Yes, Mr. Kowalski, he's a no-match.
A no-match? What do you want to do?
He's sick. It's a long story. Mr. Scamander has lost something I'm going to help him find.
Oh, you need to sit down, honey. He hasn't eaten anything all day. And, oh, that's rough. He didn't get the money he wanted for his bakery. You bake, honey? I love to cook.
You're a legilimens.
Yeah. But I always have trouble with your kind. Brits. It's the accent.
You know how to read minds.
Oh, don't worry, honey. Most guys think what he was thinking first time they see me. Now you need food.
She scampers to a kitchenette. Newt peeks out through the window drapes at the fat-bodied bug hovering outside. It spots him and flies off. Tina uses magic to set the table.
Hot dog, again?
Don't read my mind.
Not a very wholesome one.
Jacob gapes at dishware flying right past his nose. Queenie uses her wand to assemble a meal, while folded napkins flap to the table like birds. Jacob staggers over as a pitcher fills glasses with water.
Hey, Mr. Scamander.
Newt freezes while trying to sneak out the door. Queenie grins.
You prefer pie or strudel?
I really don't have a preference.
As he flashes a meek smile, Tina puts her hand on her hip. He looks away shyly.
You prefer strudel, huh, honey?
Jacob nods.
Strudel it is.
She casts raisins, slivered apples, and sugar into the air. Jacob's wide eyes follow the ingredients as they combine inside several thin sheets of dough. Pastry ribbons tie knots around the strudel. Rose-shaped apple shavings line up on top, and powdered sugar dusts the whole thing as it descends to a cooling rack and bakes instantly.
Well, sit down, Mr. Scamander.
He remains standing awkwardly by the door.
I'm not going to poison you.
The twiggy green stick man peeks out from behind Newt's lapel. Jacob pointedly nods for him to take a seat at the table. Out on a sidewalk, the young man with the bowl cut half-heartedly tries handing out pamphlets to passers-by, but no one accepts. His head hangs low. He notices Graves standing across the street, watching him from a nearby building's revolving door. The young man slowly crosses to him. He and Graves convene in an alley.
You're upset. It's your mother again. Somebody said something. What did they say? Tell me.
Do you think I'm a freak?
No. I think you're a very special young man, or I wouldn't have asked you to help me. Now would I?
As they both stand in silhouette, he puts a hand on the young man's shoulder.
Have you any news?
I'm still looking. Mr. Graves, if I knew whether it was a girl or a boy...
My vision showed only the child's immense power. He or she is no older than 10. I saw this child in close proximity to your mother. She I saw so plainly.
That could be any one of hundreds.
There's something else. Something I haven't told you. I saw you beside me in New York. You're the one who gains this child's trust.
You are the key.
I saw this. You want to join the wizarding world. I want those things too, Credence. I want them for you. So find the child. Find the child and we'll all be free.
Now, the latch pops open on Newt's suitcase.
The job ain't that glamorous. I mean, I spend most days making coffee and jinxing the John. And Tina's the career girl.
Her brunette sister smiles timidly.
Now we're orphans. Ma and Pa died of dragon pox when we were kids.
Jacob gazes at Queenie.
Oh, you're sweet. But we got each other.
Could you stop reading my mind for a second?
Oh.
Don't get me wrong, I love it. This meal, it's insanely good. And this is what I do. I'm a cook, and this is like the greatest meal I've ever had in my life.
Oh, you slay me. I ain't never really talked to a nomad before.
Huh. Really?
Newt's cheeks puff out in a deep exhale. Tina stares down into her lap. Queenie straightens.
I am not flirting.
Newt gives Tina a sidelong look. She eyes her sister apologetically.
I'm just saying, don't go getting attached. He's gonna have to be obliviated.
He mops sweat from his brow.
It's nothing personal.
Oh, hey. You okay, honey?
So, Miss Goldstein, I think Mr. Kowalski could do with an early night. Besides, you and I will need to be up early tomorrow morning to find my niffler, so...
What's a niffler?
Don't ask. Okay, you guys can bunk in here.
She steps into the adjoining room. Newt questioningly lifts his eyebrows, and she cocks her head. Later, he lies miserably in bed. Tina slides open a door sectioning the apartment and steps through with two mugs on a tray.
I thought you might like a hot drink.
A spoon magically stirs one of the drinks and taps itself off on the rim. Tina hands one to Jacob and leaves Newt's on a nightstand while he remains turned away under the covers.
Oh, wow. Psst, hey, Mrs. Commander, look, Coco.
Toilet's down the hall to the right.
Thanks.
Jacob sees Queenie smiling at him as the door slides shut.
Very much.
Newt springs from his bed, fully dressed, and lays his suitcase on the floor. Opening it, he steps inside and descends as if going downstairs. Jacob goes deadpan. Newt's hand reaches back up from the suitcase and directs him to follow. Jacob slouches, a book with moving illustrations lying open across his chest.
Come on.
Newt's hand waves him over again, then recedes inside the suitcase. Jacob dryly sets his hot cocoa aside. Stepping into the suitcase, he descends the unseen stairs until his hefty frame gets wedged in. He struggles to squeeze himself through.
For the love.
He jumps, bouncing the suitcase off the floor, with his lower half conspicuously absent. He gets sucked the rest of the way in, and the suitcase latches itself shut. Inside, he plummets into a workshop. The fat-bodied bug flies around him.
You sit down.
Jacob takes a seat in a cluttered corner, and Newt examines his neck.
That's definitely the Mertlap. You must be particularly susceptible. See, you're a muggle, so our physiologies are subtly different.
Picking herbs, he rubs them in his hands, then scoops up a cupful of water. He applies the herbs to Jacob's neck.
Ew.
Stay still.
Ah.
That should stop the sweating. And one of those should sort the twitch.
Jacob hesitates before popping some pills in his mouth and downing them with the water. With a cleaver, Newt hacks some meat into a pail.
You take that?
He hands it to Jacob. Newt squeezes a secretion into a vial.
Come on.
What's you got there?
This, the locals call Swooping Evil. Not the friendliest of names. It's quite an agile fella.
He dangles a cocoon from his finger and lets it swing on a thread.
I've been studying him, and I'm pretty sure that his venom could be quite useful if properly diluted. Just to remove bad memories, you know.
He swings the cocoon behind his back, and it grows into a large, spiky winged creature that gnashes its jaw at Jacob. Newt tugs it back into its cocoon state.
Probably shouldn't let him loose in here, though.
He turns to a door.
Come on.
Jacob swallows hard. Following Newt out the door, he pauses in amazement. The wizard stands in a rocky desert landscape, using his wand to conjure an invisible umbrella against the pouring rain.
Come on. Down you come.
An avian creature flaps its wings among bursts of lightning. The feathered beast descends past curtains containing the landscape.
Come on.
The rain ceases as it perches on a rock and stops flapping its wings. Newt stows his wand in a loop on his vest and pulls a small critter from his pocket.
Thank us, Elsie. If you'd have got out, that could have been quite catastrophic. So he's the real reason I came to America.
Jacob stands slack-jawed as Newt pets the bird's large, eagle-like head.
To bring Frank home.
The nomad inches closer.
Wait, no, so stay there. He's a wee bit sensitive to strangers. Here you are, here you are. He was trafficked, you see. I found him in Egypt. He's all chained up. I couldn't leave him there. Had to bring him back. Gonna put you back where you belong, aren't I, Frank? To the wilds of Arizona.
With a warm smile, he He chucks the critter in the air, and Frank catches it in his beak. Newt fondly watches him fly to a high, rocky perch, then turns away and cups his hands around his mouth. He takes the meat pail from Jacob's hand as he hustles past him. Two nasty-looking bugs fight over some fruit. Jacob turns to see a giant beetle rolling a steaming boulder of dung over to a mate, who's arranging similar boulders into gravity-defying stacks. A dust cloud appears on the horizon.
Here they come.
Here, who comes?
Grapples.
A giant cross between a crustacean and a mammal arrives.
Hello.
Hello.
It slobbers over Newt with its mouth tentacles.
So they're the last breeding pair in existence. So if I hadn't managed to rescue them, that could have been the end of Graphorns forever.
A Graphorn calf circles Jacob, rubbing against him affectionately. He pets it on the head.
All right.
Newt tosses some meat from the pail, and the calf chases it.
What, you rescue these creatures?
Yes, that's right. Rescue, nurture, and protect them. I'm gently trying to educate my fellow wizards about them. Come on.
Below a bright pink bird standing on a perch, Jacob follows Newt up some wooden steps to a platform, where they step through the mouth of a vast cave.
Wow.
They move into a bamboo forest.
Titus, Finn, Poppy, Marlo, Tom.
Newt carries the stick man on his arm.
He had a cold. He needed some body warmth.
Oh.
Right, on you hop.
More stick men inhabit a tree.
Oh! He has some attachment issues. Now come on, Pickett.
He won't leave Newt's arms.
Pickett. Now they're not going to bully you. Now come on. Pickett. All right. That is exactly why they accused me of favoritism.
He puts Pickett on his shoulder.
Oh, no, there goes God.
He goes to a nest of serpents.
All right, I'm coming. I'm coming. Mum's here. Mum's here. Oh, heaven. Let me take a look at it.
I know these guys.
Newt lifts out the hatchling.
Your alchemy.
You mean my alchemy?
Yes. Do you want to...
Oh, wow, yeah, sure. Okay.
The coiled serpent flaps its feathered purple wings as Jacob gently takes it in his hands.
Hey.
As he goes to pet it, it snaps at his finger.
Oh, sorry, no, don't pet them. They have to defend themselves early. See, their shells are made of silver, so they're incredibly valuable.
Okay.
Their nests tend to get ransacked by hunters.
Thank you.
Newt returns it to its nest.
Mrs. Scamander?
Oh, call me Newt.
Newt. I don't think I'm dreaming.
I'll give it away.
I ain't got the brains to make this up.
So would you mind throwing some of those pellets in with the moon calves over there?
Yeah, sure.
Just over there.
Newt pushes a wheelbarrow.
Bugger.
Niflor's gone. Of course he has, little bugger. Any chance to get his hands on something shiny?
A tree's autumn leaves take flight from its branches, revealing themselves to be winged insects like butterflies. They swarm over a number of different habitats, all sectioned off by curtains. The lizard body insects alight on hovering light bulb-shaped droplets lit from within by glowing organisms. One of the insects gets trapped inside a droplet. Another droplet is propelled forward by a water demon swimming inside. A mangy leopard prowls up on a perch of rock. Its mane puffs out like a blowfish. Newt deposits some feed behind the magnificent cat as it settles down. It takes a swipe at some passing dodo birds, which disapparate out of the way.
What did you do today, Jacob? I was inside a suitcase. Hey. Oh, hello, fellas. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy.
Under the light of a full moon, tall-necked creatures with bulging eyes and four squat legs flock around Jacob, who tosses them some floating pellets.
Cute. Oh, there it is.
The nomad sees snow sprinkling out from a loose curtain flap, which leads to a wintry locale where a bubble containing an inky black vapor hovers above a frozen pond. Static electricity flashes around the inside of the shapeless see-through shell. Jacob enters the habitat, mesmerized by the mysterious entity. Through the falling snow, he gets a closer look at the black cloud and sees that it's composed of millions of tiny particles that undulate together like a tattered membrane. While Jacob continues his slow march forward, the loose curtain flaps billow behind him, showing a broken horizon of snow-capped peaks. He gets to within an arm's length of the wobbling bubble.
Step back.
Step back.
What's the matter with...
I said, step away.
What the hell is this thing?
It's an Obscurus. I need to get going. Find everyone who's escaped before they get hurt.
Before they get hurt?
Yes, Mr. Kowalski. So they're currently in alien terrain, surrounded by millions of the most vicious creatures on the planet.
Newt sets down his pail.
Humans.
He peers inside a habitat with a broken wall.
So where would you say that a medium-sized creature likes broad open plains, trees, little waterholes, that sort of thing? Where might she go?
In New York City?
Yes.
Plains? Central Park.
And where is that exactly?
Where is Central Park?
Jacob takes note of Newt's earnest expression.
Well, look. I would come and show you, but don't you think it's kind of a double cross? The girls take us in, they make us hot cocoa.
You do realize that once they see that you start sweating, they will obliviate you in a heartbeat.
What's obliviate mean?
Oh, it'd be like you wake up and all memory of magic gone.
I won't remember any of this?
No.
All right, yeah, okay, I'll help you.
The wizard gives a satisfied nod and picks up his pail.
Come on, then.
Out in the real world, Credence crosses the street to the Second Salemers church-like home, a dull smile on his face. Going in, he carefully closes the door behind him. The older of his two sisters wipes down a mug in the kitchen area. Mary Lou sits waiting on the stairs.
Credence, where have you been?
I was looking for a place for tomorrow's meeting. There's a corner on 32nd Street that could...
His mother gives him a sidelong stare through the banister. Credence hangs his head.
I'm sorry, Ma. I didn't realize it was so late.
Mary Lou wears a harsh frown. She cocks her head at Credence as he removes his belt. Keeping his gaze lowered, he folds it up and places it in her hand, then follows her upstairs. His younger sister stands at the foot of the stairs, watching them go with a sullen expression on her pale face. At a frozen pond, children ice skate near a stone footbridge. A boy loses his footing and falls, and a girl goes to help him up. She lets go, and they both fall back. A large golden light appears below the frosty surface of the ice and passes between the two children. Their heads turn to follow it. Stopped in place, all the other skaters watch it as well as it makes its way toward the footbridge. Elsewhere, Newt and Jacob stroll past storefronts.
I was watching you at dinner.
Yeah.
People like you, don't they, Mr. Kowalski?
Oh. Well, I'm sure people like you too, huh?
Not really, no. I annoy people.
Huh.
Why did you decide to be a baker?
Well, because I'm dying. In that canning factory, everyone there's dying. It just crushes the life out of you. You like canned food? No. Yeah, me neither. That's why I want to make pastries, you know? It makes people happy. We're going this way.
So did you get your loan?
No. I ain't got no collateral. Stayed in the army too long, apparently. I don't know.
You fought in the war?
Of course I fought in the war. Everyone fought in the war. You didn't fight in the war?
I worked mostly with dragons. Ukrainian iron bellies. Eastern Front.
He notices steam rising from an automobile's broken hood ornament and jewels scattered across the wet pavement. Crouching low, he follows the trail past the storefront window. Inside, the Niffler freezes like a statue with two pieces of jewelry draped over its arm. Newt pauses and quickly doubles back to the window. The Niffler remains frozen while the pieces of jewelry slip off his arm. He bounds from his display pedestal, knocking it over.
Fenestra!
Newt's wand disintegrates the window.
Oh.
Jacob watches him rummage through drawers in the jewelry store, then glances around surreptitiously. The Niffler scurries up over Newt's head to a crystal chandelier. The wizard grabs hold of the other end, then slips, causing it to spin around. Jacob tries to keep calm. Another pedestrian crosses the street down the block. Jacob innocently stuffs his hands in his pockets. The chandelier collapses. The latch pops open on Newt's suitcase. Jacob eyes it warily. As Newt chases the Niffler up a display case, it tips against the window. Jacob reaches slowly to the latch. Spiderweb cracks appear in the display window. As Jacob closes the latch, the display case comes crashing out the window, spilling Newt and the Niffler onto the sidewalk. The creature starts to flee across the street. The Niffler tumbles backwards into the air, spilling stolen valuables from his pouch. Jacob uses the suitcase to shield himself from all the flying jewelry, while Newt ducks and weaves. The Niffler grabs hold of a light post and spins himself into another jewelry store window, which captures him like a sticky membrane.
All right? Happy?
Newt pulls him out of the window.
One down, two to go.
Police vehicles arrive on the scene. Covered in jewelry, Jacob holds his hands in the air while Newt shakes more stolen goods loose from the Niffler's pouch.
They went that way, officer.
Hands up!
The display window shatters. The Niffler pokes his head out from Newt's coat.
The hell is that?
Jacob points down the sidewalk.
Blind.
The police officers turn their weapons on a lion striding up the sidewalk.
You know, New York is considerably more interesting than I'd expected.
Newt picks up his suitcase and disapparates with Jacob. The policemen look around, bewildered. In Central Park, Newt and Jacob run across the footbridge over the frozen pond and cross paths with an ostrich. The wizard gives his companion a helmet.
Put this on.
Why would I have to wear something like this?
Because your skull is susceptible to breakage under immense force.
Newt runs ahead with a crouched gorilla-like gait. A view across Manhattan shows snowy Central Park in the distance. The Goldstein sisters peer out from a window at their apartment, then throw open the sliding doors to find their two guests missing from their beds. Tina races off.
But we made him cocoa.
Back in Central Park.
Right.
Newt takes out an armored vest from his coat.
If you just pop this on.
Okay.
Now there's absolutely nothing for you to worry about.
Tell me, has anyone ever believed you? You told him not to worry?
Well, my philosophy is that worrying means you suffer twice.
They make their way into the Central Park Zoo.
She's in season. She needs to mate.
A huge magical beast corners a hippo. Newt dabs liquid from a vial on his wrists.
A rumpet musk. She's mad for it.
Jacob gives the vial a whiff. Newt opens his suitcase on the ground, then pulls up his sleeves as he approaches the Arumpin. He crouches in a low squat with his hands behind his back, then springs up. The Arumpin breathes out a geyser of mist through a blowhole. Jacob watches from outside the cage. Newt stomps down one foot. The Arumpin turns to him, a sack around the base of her horn glowing with light. Newt draws a wavy trail in the snow with his foot. He then pivots on one foot, presenting his backside to the Arumpin. He throws aside the tails of his coat. The Arumpin wiggles her hefty body as she watches him hop around with goofy moves. Jacob watches disbelievingly. As Newt takes a deliberate sideways tumble, the Arumpin's horn sack glows brighter. Mimicking Newt, she drops down on her haunches and rolls toward the suitcase, stopping on her back.
Good girl.
She pedals her stubby legs.
Come on, into the case.
As Jacob takes another whiff of the musk, a raw fish drops on him from above, causing him to spill it on himself. The Arumpin rolls back to her feet. Jacob sees a seal behind him. It flounces off. Jacob turns to see the Arumpin watching him.
Oh, no.
Newt wears a panicked look. Jacob flees. The Arumpin follows him, bashing through an already busted wall. Jacob scrambles across breaking ice to a rocky habitat. The Arumpin butts him over the edge to the other side of the ice. Following him, she crashes through to the pond underneath, then chases him out of the zoo. Newt starts to cast a spell.
Prepare it!
A baboon steals his wand.
Merlin's beard.
Jacob runs zigzag across a snowy meadow to try and shake the Arumpin. Newt offers the baboon a stick.
Exactly the same.
The baboon clutches his wand tightly.
Same thing.
Newt!
Jacob hangs from a tree just out of reach of the Arumpin, who's on her back, pedaling her feet.
No, don't.
The baboon strikes the wand and gets shocked.
I'm so sorry.
With his wand in one hand and suitcase in the other, Newt climbs up on a hill of debris. The Arumpin stabs her horn into the tree, injecting it with light. The trunk warps. The fiery light spreads, hollowing it out. The Arumpin waits patiently as the tree collapses on its scorched trunk. Tipping sideways, it sends Jacob tumbling down a hill. The Arumpin chases him onto the frozen pond, her stubby legs skidding on the ice. Newt arrives by the footbridge. Jacob slips and nearly loses his footing. The Arumpin skids after him on her belly. Newt apparates in front of her, holding his suitcase open, and she slides into it, rump first. Jacob turns to see her barreling toward him. He falls back on his bottom. Spinning in circles, the Arumpin struggles to regain her footing. Her flailing tongue licks the side of Jacob's head just as the rest of her massive body gets sucked inside the suitcase.
Good show, Mr. Kowalski.
The nomad offers his hand.
Call me Jacob.
Newt shakes it. The two men shuffle across the slippery ice back towards the footbridge.
Well, two down, one to go.
Tina eavesdrops on them from atop the bridge.
Can you hop?
Venturing down to the banks of the frozen pond, she finds Newt's suitcase lying on the ice, with the two men nowhere to be found. She sits down on the lid. She closes the latches. Meanwhile, at a fundraiser.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's keynote speaker needs no introduction from me. He's been mentioned as a future president. And if you don't believe me, just read his daddy's newspapers.
Shaw Sr. waves from his table. Langdon sits unamused.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the senator for New York, Henry Shaw!
As Senator Shaw takes the stage, the announcer pats him on the shoulder.
Thank you.
He winks at his father's table.
Thank you.
Outside, a flying view rockets down the rain-slick street. Tina carries Newt's suitcase up a sidewalk. She slows to a stop and turns back to see darkness enveloping the neighborhood building by building, cutting out all the street lamps and car headlights. With a look of dread, she hugs the suitcase close to her chest as the blackout passes by.
And it's true, we have made some progress. But there is no reward for idleness. So just as the odious saloons have been banished.
Shaw Sr. looks over his shoulder at a giant pipe organ.
So now the pool halls and these private parlors.
Langdon looks back at the organ as well. Senator Shaw glances around uneasily.
What is that?
A dusty cloud shoots into the room, sweeping aside tables in its path. Backing away from the microphone, the senator gets swept up into a banner bearing his likeness that reads, Shaw, America's future. He drops like a sack of bricks to the stage. Tears appear in the banner, slashing his face. As Shaw Sr. lumbers toward the stage, the force ripples back out of the meeting hall. The old newspaper magnate stops in his tracks as he sees his son lying dead with all the color sapped from his face and veiny scars mottling the skin. He drops down on his knees, his grief-stricken face taking a closer view of the body. The scratched-up banner towers over their lowly forms. Langdon stares slack-jawed after the vanished entity, then looks back at his family members, seething.
Witches.
At Makusa. The magical exposure threat level changes to emergency. Tina hurries to a throne room.
Of the statute of secrecy that threatens to expose us all.
I will not be lectured by the man who let Gellert Grindelwald slip through his fingers.
Madam President, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is critical.
Holding Newt's suitcase, she comes to a slow stop in the center of the room as she notices scores of dignitaries convened all around her. A cloud of magical stardust illuminates the room from overhead, and a large pentagram fills the main floor.
You better have an excellent excuse for this intrusion, Miss Goldstein.
Yes, I do.
She proceeds forward toward President Pickwery.
Ma'am, yesterday a wizard entered New York with a case. This case full of magical creatures, and unfortunately some have escaped.
He arrived yesterday?
You've known for 24 hours that an unregistered wizard set magical beast loose in New York, and you see fit to tell us only when a man has been killed?
Who's been killed?
Where is this man?
Tina lays the suitcase down on a shaded triangle of the pentagram pointed toward the throne. She undoes the latches, then rises and takes a step back. Striding forth again, she knocks on the lid. She steps back once more and waits. Graves watches her with interest. President Pickwery stands regally on a red-carpeted staircase clad in her Art Deco Thunderbird gown and an opulent headpiece. Newt appears from inside the suitcase, pushing open the lid. He climbs out apprehensively as he sees the wizards and witches all gathered there. Jacob pops up beside him. The two men look around sheepishly.
Scamander.
Newt latches the suitcase.
Oh, hello, Minister.
This is Scamander,
the war hero?
No, this is his little brother. And what are you doing in New York?
I came to buy an apple as a puffkin, sir.
Right. What are you really doing here?
Goldstein. Who is this?
This is Jacob Kowalski, Madam President. He's a nomad who got bitten by one of Mr. Scamander's creatures.
Nomad.
Obliviator.
They see a ghostly image of Senator Shaw's corpse floating through the air.
Alan's beard.
You know which of your creatures was responsible, Mrs. Scamander.
Newt focuses on the body.
No creature did this. Don't pretend.
You must know what that was. Look at the march. I wasn't obscurus.
You go too far, Mr. Scamander. There is no obscurial in America. Impound that case, Graves.
He compels it to his side.
Get arrest them.
From across the room, Graves forces Newt, Jacob, and Tina to their knees.
Don't hurt those creatures. Please, you don't understand. Nothing in there is dangerous. Nothing.
We'll be the judges of that. Take them to the cells.
Don't hurt those creatures, because nothing in there is dangerous. Please don't hurt my creatures. They aren't dangerous. Please, they're not dangerous. They're not dangerous.
In a stark chamber filled with columns, the three prisoners are all confined to one cell. Newt crouches in a corner, picking at his fingers.
I'm so sorry about your creatures, Mr. Scamander. I truly am.
Can someone please tell me what this obscurious thing is, please?
There hasn't been one for centuries.
I met one in Sudan 3 months ago. There used to be more of them, but they still exist. So before wizards went underground, when we were still being hunted by muggles, young wizards and witches sometimes tried to suppress their magic to avoid persecution. So instead of learning to harness or to control their powers, they developed what was called an obscurus.
It's an unstable, uncontrollable dark force that busts out and attacks.
Jacob knits his brow, mouth agape.
And then vanishes.
Obscurials can't survive long, can they?
There's no documented case of an Obscurial surviving past the age of 10. So the one I met in Africa was 8 when she... She was 8 when she died.
Tina's shoulders rise and fall with a deep breath.
What are you telling me here? That Senator Shaw was killed by a kid?
Newt shoots him a sober glance. Now, at the Second Salem Church.
My mama, your mama, flying on a switch. My mama, your mama, witches never cry. My mama, your mama, witch is gonna die. Witch number one, drowning in a river. Witch number two, got a noose.
Hand out your leaflets.
Witch number three.
I'll know if you dump them. Tell me if you see anything suspicious.
As orphans file out with stacks of leaflets, Credence watches them over his shoulder. Outside, his pale little sister, her blonde hair tied into tight braids across the back of her head, strides down the middle of the road and pauses. She looks down, blinking, then flings her pile of leaflets into the air and watches them flutter down in front of the tenement buildings. At Makuza, Newt glances back at the cell as he and Tina are led away in shackles.
It's good to make your acquaintance, Jacob. And I hope you get your bakery.
Jacob waves goodbye from behind bars. Now, Newt sits at a table across from Graves, while Tina and their white-clad witch guards stand off to the side.
You're an interesting man, Mr. Scamander.
Mr. Graves.
She steps forward, but he holds a finger to his lips and shakes his head. Tina's eyes flutter despairingly. Graves reads from a document.
Thrown out of Hogwarts for endangering human life.
That was nice, then.
With a beast. Yet one of your teachers argued strongly against your expulsion. Now, what makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you?
Keeping his gaze averted, Newt shakes his head.
I really couldn't say.
So setting a pack of dangerous creatures loose here was... It was just another accident. Is that right?
What would I do deliberately?
To expose wizard kind. To provoke war between the magical and non-magical worlds.
Mass slaughter for the greater good, you mean?
Yes. Quite.
I'm not one of Grindelwald's fanatics, Mr. Graves.
A smile flashes on Graves' lips.
I wonder what you can tell me about this,
Mr. Scamander.
Using wandless magic, he draws the black cloud-filled Obscurus to the table. Tina frowns with concern. As Graves pauses the bubble over the table, Newt glances back at her.
It's an Obscurus. But it's not what you think, so I managed to separate it from the Sudanese girl as I tried to save her. So I wanted to take it home to study it. But he cannot survive outside that. He could not hurt anyone, Tina.
So it's useless without the host.
Useless? Useless? That is a parasitical magical force that killed a child. What on earth did you use it for?
Tina stares uneasily at the harsh-eyed security director.
You fool nobody, Mr. Scamander. You brought this Obscurus into the city of New York in the hope of causing mass disruption, breaking the statute of secrecy and revealing the magical world.
You know that can't hurt anyone, you know that.
You were therefore guilty of a treasonous betrayal of your fellow wizards and is sentenced to death. Miss Goldstein, who's aided and abetted you.
No, she's done nothing of the kind.
Receives the same sentence. Just do it immediately. I'll inform President Pickering myself. Please.
On another floor, Queenie drops a coffee service tray. Workers look over at her from around a table. Queenie rushes off. Meanwhile, the white-clad executioners march Tina and Newt up a corridor.
Don't do this, Bernadette. Please.
It don't hurt.
They enter a rust-stained marble room with a medical chair hovering in midair over a reflective pool of water. Tina looks back despondently at Newt, then faces forward again, trembling. In the grip of another executioner, he blinks helplessly. Bernadette places her wand to Tina's temple, and her sobbing immediately stops. Twirling her wand, The smiling executioner reels a string of glowing light from Tina's head, while Newt looks on dismally. Bernadette flings the glowing string into the pool, and an image of a young girl's face appears in the rippling water. The adult Tina watches wistfully.
Come on, Pumpkin, time for bed. Are you ready?
Don't that look good?
A dreamy smile lights up her face.
You want to get in? Huh?
Tina nods. In the lobby, Queenie watches a strapping guard escort Jacob out of an elevator.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, Queenie.
They need you downstairs. I'll go get this guy.
You ain't qualified.
Hey, Sam, does Cecily know you've been seeing Ruby?
They eye a female worker up ahead.
How did
you... Let me obliviate this guy and she'll never hear about it from me.
Sam grudgingly relinquishes the prisoner into Queenie's custody.
What are you doing?
Shh. Dean's in trouble. I'm trying to listen.
Jacob, where's Newt's case?
I think that guy Graves took it.
Okay, come on.
What, you're not going to obliviate me?
Of course not. You're one of us now.
Meanwhile, Tina sits in the medical chair, which floats downward toward the pool. She watches memories swirl by below her, including one of her and young Queenie dancing with their parents. As an adult, she encounters Mary Lou standing over Credence with a belt in her hand at the Second Salem Church. With her wand, Tina sends the belt flying from the woman's hand, then comforts the boy. He flinches from her touch. Tears stream from Tina's eyes as she watches the memory. Behind Newt's back, Pickett goes to work on the wizard's shackled wrists. Elsewhere,
Alohomora.
A lock twinkles, but remains unmoved.
Alberto. Oh, you wouldn't know some fancy spell to lock us off.
Meanwhile, Pickett gets one of Newt's shackles open.
Okay, let's get the good stuff out of you.
As his executioner moves her wand for his head, he dodges and skips his swooping evil cocoon across the surface of the pool, causing it to wake up into its winged form. Grabbing the woman's wand, he redirects a blast at Bernadette. The swooping evil knocks his executioner off her feet. Her wand drops in the pool and disintegrates, changing all but the memories into molten metal.
Wait.
Mary Lou points accusatorily up at Tina floating in her chair. Meanwhile, Jacob kicks in the locked door to Graves' office, and Queenie grabs Newt's suitcase and the two prisoners' wands.
Ah, Mr. Commander!
Now, don't panic.
What do you suggest I do instead?
The swooping evil circles Tina trapped on her sinking chair.
Jump.
Columns of molten metal churn around her.
Are you crazy?
Jump on him.
His eyes follow the swooping evil.
Tina, listen to me. I'll catch you. Tina?
She stands on the seat of her chair as the bottom gets incinerated. Her fearful gaze lifts to Newt.
I'll catch you.
The swooping evil keeps circling.
I've got you, Tina.
As a shell of molten metal starts to close around her, she leaps forward onto the creature and steps safely to Newt.
Come on.
Now, Queenie and Jacob march briskly through the lobby. A squad of Aurors in leather trench coats charge downstairs. In an underground chamber, two of them fire a spell at Newt and Tina, who duck behind columns. The swooping evil takes them both out and probes at one of their heads with its tongue.
Lead his brains, come on! Come on!
Two more Aurors cast spells, but the creature deflects them.
What is that thing?
Swooping evil.
Well, I love it.
Elsewhere, Graves descends a flight of grated metal stairs. As Newt and Tina come barreling around a column, they run into Queenie and Jacob. Queenie holds up Newt's suitcase.
Get in.
Now, owls swoop around the sunny atrium. Queenie walks along briskly, carrying Newt's suitcase. She starts downstairs for the exit.
Queenie!
Stopping in her tracks, she turns to find Mr. Abernathy approaching her.
Where are you going?
I'm sick, Mr. Abernathy.
Again? What you got there?
Ladies' things. If you want to take a look, I don't mind.
Oh, good gravy. No, I... You get well now.
Thanks.
She gives a flirty tug on his necktie before scampering off. He self-consciously straightens his suit as he watches her go. Now, a flying view soars through the city, arching down alleyways. Graves materializes.
Credence, have you found the child?
The young man avoids his gaze.
I can't.
Show me.
Graves takes his trembling hand. It's covered in welts and scratches.
My boy, the sooner we find this child, the sooner you can put that pain in the past where it belongs.
He heals Credence's wounds.
I want you to have this, Credence. I would trust very few with it.
He puts a medallion necklace on him.
Very few.
He holds Credence by the sides of his neck.
But you... you're different. And when you find the child, you touch the symbol and I will know and I will come to you.
The medallion is the symbol of the Deathly Hallows.
Do this, and you will be honored among wizards forever.
He pulls Credence into a hug.
The child is dying, Credence.
He strokes the young man's head behind the ear.
Time is running out.
Eyes closed, Credence convulses slightly in torment as Graves steps away down the alley and disapparates. On a rooftop, Newt and Tina stare out at the dusky city, while Queenie looks inside a pigeon coop at Jacob.
Your grandfather kept pigeons? Mine bred owls. I used to love feeding them.
Graves always insisted the disturbances were caused by a beast. We need to catch all your creatures so he can't keep using them as a scapegoat.
There's only one still missing. Dougal, my demiguise.
Dougal?
Slight problem is that, he's invisible.
Invisible?
Yes. Most of the time, he does,
How do you catch something...
with immense difficulty.
Oh.
Newt gazes at her, with Pickett on his shoulder. Tina steps closer.
Narlac.
Excuse me?
Narlac. He was an informant of mine when I was an Auror. He used to trade in magical creatures on the side.
He wouldn't happen to have an interest in paw prints, would he?
She puts her hands on her hips.
He's interested in anything he can sell.
Later, the foursome heads through an alleyway between tenement buildings. Tina leads the group down a staircase to an alcove that dead ends at a brick wall. A painting on the bricks depicts a red-headed woman facing her reflection, which goes beyond the borders of a circular mirror. Words below read, enchanting, beguiling, alluring. The two sisters wand themselves and their outfits change to sequin cocktail dresses while the painting comes to life. Tina knocks on it. Newt wands his bow tie and it ties itself. A gash tears through the painted woman's eyes as a man peeks out through a sliding hatch. In a speakeasy, a singer conjures figures in fairy dust to illustrate her song. Jacob stands at the bar.
There's a guy get a drink in this joint.
A bottle slides into his hand.
What, ain't you ever seen a house elf before?
No, of course. I love house elves. Well, my uncle's a house elf.
The short elf bartender glowers, the top of his head just barely visible behind the bar.
Six shots of giggle water and a load blaster, please.
The house elf snaps his fingers and Queenie's drink order magically fulfills itself. Jacob sniffs one of the shots of giggle water.
Are all my matches like you?
No. I'm the only one like me.
He suavely downs his shot. Sitting at a table with Tina, Newt scans the speakeasy. A giant, playing cards, takes a drink from the house elf that looks like the size of a thimble in his huge hand. In another corner, wanted posters are plastered along a wall.
I've arrested half of the people in here.
You can tell me to mind my own business, but I saw something in that death potion back there. I saw you hugging that second Salem boy.
His name's Credence. His mother beats him. She beats all those kids she's adopted, but she seems to hate him the most.
And she was the nomad you attacked.
That's how I lost my job. I went for her in front of a meeting of her crazy followers. They all had to be obliterated. It was a big scandal.
A goblin walks in with a pair of wands poking out from his shoulder holsters. Smoking a cigar, he takes a seat at Newt and Tina's table.
So,
a house elf brings him a drink.
You're the guy with the case full of monsters, huh?
News travels fast.
Narlak downs his drink in one gulp.
I was hoping you'd be able to tell me if there have been any sightings, tracks, that sort of thing.
The elf hands his boss a quill pen.
You got a pretty big price on your head, Mr. Scamander.
He signs a document.
Why should I help you? Instead of turning you in.
I take it I'll have to make it worth your while.
Let's consider it a cover charge.
He chomps his cigar as Newt rolls him some coins.
McCoos is offering more than that.
The wizard sets down an astronomical instrument.
Lunoscope? I got five.
The dark-eyed goblin turns away, his sharp pointy teeth chopping his cigar again. Newt offers a translucent oblong capsule.
Frozen ashwind egg.
Oh, you see now what?
He points his backwards bending fingers.
Wait a minute.
Pickett peeks out from Newt's lapel.
That's a boat. That's a boat truckle. Right?
The little stickman hides.
No.
Oh, come on. They pick locks, am I right?
You're not having him.
Well,
Narlak gets up.
Good luck getting back alive, Mr. Scamander. What with the whole of Makuza on your back?
Jacob bristles.
All right.
His back to Newt, Narlak pauses in his tracks and smiles to himself. Newt pries Pickett from his lapel.
Pickett.
The boat truckle reaches out desperately with his root-like hands.
Oh.
Narlak takes the frightened stick man from the wizard and looks him over. Averting his gaze, Newt ashamedly clenches his jaw.
Something invisible has been wreaking havoc around Fifth Avenue. You may want to check out Macy's department store. Might have what you're looking for.
Dougal. One last thing. There's a Mr. Graves who works at Makuza. I was wondering what you knew of his background.
You ask a lot of questions, Mr. Scamander. That can get you killed.
Carrying a crate into a back room, a house elf turns around.
Makuza are coming!
You kept them off?
Narlak laughs. Wanted posters now show Newt and Tina. Jacob holds his hands up in surrender.
Sorry, Mr. Narlak.
He punches out the goblin gangster.
Reminds me of my foreman.
Aurors use spells to arrest the patrons. Newt climbs under a table and catches Pickett climbing up a table leg. Jacob drinks another shot of giggle water before disapparating with his friends. At the Second Salem Church, while her big sister collates pamphlets, the pale little girl looks up toward the ceiling. Upstairs, Credence rifles under a bed and retrieves a wand. His little sister comes up and catches him.
What you doing, Credence?
He hastily retreats from under the bed and stands up, his lanky frame towering over her.
Where'd you get this?
Give it back, Credence. It's just a toy.
Mary Lou enters and stares at the wand with a horrified gape.
What is this?
Downstairs, the older sister primly stuffs flyers into a bag.
Take it off.
She pauses and looks up at the second floor landing, where Mary Lou stands at the banister with the wand in her clutches. The disciplinarian sternly turns around to watch Credence unbuckle his belt. A smile touches her lips as she holds up the wand and breaks it in half, throwing the splinters to the floor while her youngest daughter watches timidly from her doorway. Mary Lou reaches out for Credence's belt.
I am not your mom. Your mother was a wicked, unnatural woman.
It was mine.
Modesty.
The belt magically whips out of her hand. Modesty glowers at it on the floor near the banister. Mary Lou turns her hand up to reveal her skinned palm.
What is this?
Modesty looks up into her eyes, then down at the belt again, while her big sister watches tensely from the first floor. Mary Lou walks over to the belt. As she reaches for it, it shoots away. She backs slowly along the banister and starts up another set of stairs. Turning to run, she gets blasted by a cloud of tattered gray smoke. She drops all the way to the first floor and crashes down lifelessly, her face mottled with veins. The Obscurus whips around the church building, bashing everything in its path. Meanwhile, Jacob, Newt, and the Goldstein sisters approach the display window of a department store and see a purse float off the arm of a mannequin. Hovering a few inches off the floor, it makes its way past display cases of merchandise. Now, inside the store, the group spies on it from behind Christmas decorations.
Our demigods are fundamentally peaceful, but they can give a nasty nip if provoked.
Dougal climbs a display shelf.
You two, head that way, and try very hard not to be predictable.
Jacob and Queenie move off from the other two.
Was that the demigods?
No, but I think it might be the reason that the demigods is here.
Newt steps out into the open. Seeing him, the silky-haired demiguise quickly lopes upstairs. Newt chuckles to himself. Upstairs, Dougal walks through a stockroom with the purse on his arm, completely stuffed with treats.
Its sight operates on probability, so it can foresee the most likely immediate future.
Newt sneaks up on it.
What's it doing?
It's babysitting.
What did you just say?
This is my fault.
Dougal sees him approach.
I thought I had them all, but must have miscounted.
He slowly lays down his suitcase.
Who's babysitting that?
A giant scaly serpent slithers through a patch of moonlight. Dougal beckons it closer. He feeds it a cookie. Tina lets out a relaxed chuckle.
Alchemy's a cryptic secret. So they grow to fill available space.
The alchemy turns its beak toward Newt.
Mommy's here.
Dougal's eyes flash blue as he envisions a future. A Christmas ornament rolls across the floor, alarming the alchemy, which attacks. Now, as Queenie steps forward, her foot kicks the Christmas ornament. The alchemy rears up over Newt.
Whoa!
Dougal leaps into Jacob's arms. Newt gets caught on one of the alchemy's wings.
We need an insect! Any kind of insect and a teapot! Find the teapot!
As the serpent smashes up the room, Jacob stomps after scattering cockroaches.
Whoa.
The alchemy's whipping tail smashes through the roof. Jacob spots a roach skittering across a crate. Tina grabs at another on the floor, but it keeps darting out of reach. Goods get knocked off a shelf and crash down around Queenie.
I got it!
With Dougal on his back, he dives for the roach and catches it.
Teapot!
She finds one. The alchemy's expanding body pins Jacob and the demiguise to a shelf. Dougal goes invisible. Jacob sees the alchemy's face looming right over his shoulder, eyeing the roach in his fingers.
Roach in teapot.
He strokes the beast's purple scales. He holds up the roach to Tina standing at the far end of the room. The alchemy watches intently as he throws it. The roach's tiny jointed legs flail as it flies through the air. As the alchemy goes for it, Newt falls off the back of its head. Queenie holds a stemmed punch bowl over her head like a helmet. Holding out the teapot, Tina leaps over the alchemy's uncoiling tail. Newt digs inside a crate. Racing as fast as she can, Tina catches the roach inside the teapot. The alchemy's serpentine body whips across every corner of the room as it dives beak first after the bug. Tina braces herself. The alchemy shrinks down to size and streams inside the teapot. Newt comes skidding over just in time to clamp a mismatched lid down over the top.
Coranoptixic. They also shrink to fit the available space.
The now tiny alchemy chomps down the cockroach.
Tell me the truth. Was that everything that came out of the case?
That's everything. And that's the truth.
Inside Newt's suitcase, Jacob walks Dougal to his habitat.
Fish comes.
You happy to be home? Yeah. You're exhausted, buddy. Come on. There you go.
Tina returns the shrunken Akemi to its nest with the other hatchlings. The coiled serpents chirp up at her, and she smiles. The Arumpin pokes her horned head inside the habitat. A ball of dung rolls by, pushed along by a beetle. Newt takes Picket from his pocket.
Right. I think we need to talk.
Inside his treasure-filled burrow, the Niffler neatly stacks coins.
I wouldn't have let him keep you, Picket. Pick, I would rather chop off my hand than get rid of you after everything that you've done for me. Now, come on. Pick, we've talked about sulking before, haven't we? Picket? Come on, give me a smile. Picket, give me a smile. All right. Now that is beneath you.
He sets Picket on his shoulder. Inside a shed, a woman smiles from a moving black and white photo.
Hey, Newt. Who is she?
There's no one.
Leda the Strange. I've heard of that family. Aren't they kind of, you know?
Please don't read my mind.
Queenie apologetically purses her lips as she watches him sort dried husks into a bowl. He pauses for a long moment, then faces her.
Sorry, I asked you not to.
I know, I'm sorry. I can't help it. People are easiest to read when they're hurting.
I'm not hurting. Anyway, it was a long time ago.
He goes back to work. Wringing her hands together, Queenie approaches him gingerly.
That was a real close friendship you had at school.
Well, neither of us really fitted in at school. So we became quite...
We became real close. For years.
Newt keeps a stiff upper lip as he stares back at her.
She was a taker. You need to give her. What are you two talking about?
Nothing.
School.
School.
Did you say school? Is there a school? A wizardry school here in America?
Of course. Ilvermorny. It's only the best wizard school in the whole world.
I think you'll find that the best wizarding school in the world is Hogwarts.
Hogwash.
Lightning flashes in the sky as Frank flaps his wings.
Danger. He senses danger.
Meanwhile, Graves apparates into a brick alleyway plastered with advertisements for theater and circus performances. Looking around cautiously, his wand in hand, he approaches the Second Salem Church and sees a body lying among the collapsed beams and destroyed furniture. Graves proceeds inside. Pulling aside his black overcoat, he puts away his wand in a belt loop. Mary Lou's open eyes stare lifelessly from her cadaverous face. Credence is slumped against the wall, clutching the Deathly Hallows necklace. Graves lays his hands on him comfortingly.
The Obscurial was here. Where did she go?
Help me. Help me.
The security director pats him on the head.
Didn't you tell me you had another sister?
Is that me?
Where's your other sister, Credence?
I need help.
The little one. Where did she go?
Please help.
Graves smacks him.
Your sister's in grave danger. We need to find her.
He grabs Credence and disapparates with him to a street with a destroyed building. They enter a tenement and go upstairs to a vacant floor.
What is this place? Ma adopted Modesty out of here. From a family of 12. She misses her brothers and sisters. She still talks about them.
Where is she?
I don't know.
You're a squib, Credence. I could smell it off you the minute I met you.
What?
You have magical ancestry, but no power.
But you said you could teach me.
You're unteachable. Your mother's dead. That's your reward. I'm done with you.
He walks away, leaving Credence racked with angry convulsions. Graves proceeds slowly down a long, narrow hall.
Modesty.
He turns a corner into a dark room. He finds Modesty hiding under a piece of furniture.
Modesty. There's no need to be afraid.
He crouches to her.
I'm here with your brother, Credence.
Sobbing, she scoots away from him. Graves opens his hands to her.
How'd you come now?
Cracks appear in the ceiling and along a wall. Graves rises back to his feet as the whole room shakes. Cowering, Modesty watches a sliding blackboard collapse on its cracked frame. The whole wall then crumbles away, from the plaster right down to the bricks. Graves stares, aghast, as the next two walls collapse as well to reveal Credence standing with his head bowed. Modesty cringes. Credence continues to gaze downward with a faraway stare. Remaining composed, Graves gives him a nod.
Credence, I owe you an apology.
I trusted you. That you were my friend. That you were different.
You can control it, Credence.
As Graves looks around at the destruction, Credence lifts his gaze to him with a sneer.
I don't think I want to, Mr. Graves.
His face begins to tremble. His eyes and skin go pale. He disintegrates into an obscurus, shooting past Graves. The fiery cyclone of black smoke hurtles outside and down the block, obliterating the facades of buildings along the way. The obscurus continues its path of destruction up a cross street, where it zooms past an illuminated rooftop sign reading, Squires.
Is that it? That's the obscuria thing?
Newt and his friends watch from the roof.
It's more powerful than any obscure I've ever heard of.
The black cloud ravages another street. Newt turns to Tina.
If I don't come back, look after my creatures. It's everything that you need to know is in there.
He gives her a book.
What? They're not getting it.
Leaving her with the suitcase, he jumps off the roof. He disapparates.
You heard him. Look after them.
She drops the suitcase with Queenie and follows.
Keep hold of that, honey.
No.
Jacob stops her from going as well.
I can't take you. Please let go of me, Jacob.
Hey. You're the one that said I was one of yous. Right?
It's too dangerous.
A distant explosion lights up their faces as they gaze into each other's eyes. Queenie caresses his cheek. On the street, Graves follows the obscurus as it continues to wreak havoc. An illuminated vertical sign crashes to the ground behind him. Pedestrians flee as the destructive cyclone makes its way into Times Square, an inferno blazing at its core. A theater's marquee crumbles to the sidewalk. Newt apparates onto the scene.
To survive so long, with this inside you, Credence, is a miracle. You are a miracle. Come with me. Think of what we could achieve together.
As the obscurus attacks Graves, Newt takes cover behind a toppled automobile. Knocked to the pavement, Graves sits himself up. Tina arrives and takes shelter behind another car.
Newt!
It's the second Salem boy. He's the obscurial.
He's not a child.
His power must be so strong he's somehow managed to survive.
Graves carefully steps closer to the obscurus.
Newt! Save him!
Newt takes a running start and disapparates. A demonic face roars from within the cyclone.
Mr. Graves!
Graves turns just in time to block a spell from Tina. The obscurus takes off. Bolts of energy shoot from the two adversaries' wands and meet halfway between them in a stalemate. Graves glances irritably after the obscurus.
Tina, you're always turning up for your least wanted.
She dives as he summons an automobile to fly at her, allowing him to disapparate. Tina gets back to her feet. At Makuza, a map of New York City lights up with a branching trail of magical activity.
Contain this, or we are exposed and it'll mean war.
Several of her top aurors disapparate. Out in the city, the Obscurus shatters windows as it rounds the corner of a skyscraper. Newt apparates onto a rooftop.
Credence! Credence, I can help!
He disapparates again just in the nick of time as the Obscurus comes barreling toward him. Teleporting from rooftop to rooftop, he races alongside the unstoppable force. Aurors appear all around, attacking the Obscurus from above. Newt ducks for cover against an access door. Bouncing erratically off high-rise buildings, the Obscurus comes crashing back down to street level. Police stand waiting at a roadblock. A few of them wear nervous looks. The Obscurus tears down the road, obliterating everything in its path. The police officers open fire as automobiles come crashing down ahead of them. They then scatter as the fiery cyclone blasts through their roadblock. The face shape dissolves into the silky rags of black fog, which rockets upward. As it crashes back down to the street, a shockwave blows out toward the surrounding buildings, then retracts into inky splotches that hover in midair. The center coalesces into a human shape, which slinks off into a subway entrance. Watching from the rooftop, Newt purses his lips, then apparates into the City Hall subway station. Above the platform, chandeliers start to flicker out as a filmy gray fog skims along the vaulted ceiling and courses through arched columns on the other side of the tracks. Newt guardedly sidles closer. Outside, the aurors use their wands to create a magical energy field around the area surrounding the subway entrance, their individual force fields melding into one big invisible dome. Graves strides through their ranks.
Fire the area.
Yes, sir.
I don't want anyone else down there.
Tina rolls inside the protected area just before the force field seals off an unguarded corner. Back in the subway, Newt peers around a column alongside the tracks and sees the dark smoke collecting along a wall.
Credence. It is Credence, isn't it? I'm here to help you, Credence. Because I'm not here to hurt you.
The English wizard ventures out from behind his column into the dark subway tunnel. He steps down into the gravel along the edge of the tracks, his mouth hanging open uncertainly as he approaches the tattered curtain of dark smoke.
I've met someone just like you, Credence. A girl. A young girl who'd been imprisoned. She had been locked away and she'd been punished for her magic.
The vapor sinks from the wall and solidifies into Credence's crouched form on the other side of the tracks. Staying where he is, Newt squats down to his eye level.
Credence.
The young Obscurial warily meets his gaze.
Can I come over to you? Can I come over?
As Newt rises back up, a spell hits him from down the dark tunnel. Graves strides from the shadows. Credence takes off running. Graves fires more blasts at Newt, who rolls to the columns for cover. The Englishman retaliates, but his adversary easily deflects his spell. As the train barrels toward Credence, Graves uses his magic to throw him out of the way. Outside, a crowd gathers outside the luminous dome of energy.
That thing killed my son. I want justice.
I'll expose you for who you are and what you've done.
In the subway, Graves sends a current of electricity down the tracks at Newt, who snuffs it out. He then manipulates the tracks themselves and sweeps the Englishman off his feet. Swinging his arm around and around, Graves zaps his adversary repeatedly with bolts of electricity. Back outside, Langdon chuckles while his father speaks to photographers.
Look, take photos.
Meanwhile, Graves keeps zapping Newt, the electricity arcing between his body and the rails. Down the tunnel, Credence whimpers. Newt rolls onto his side and watches him convulse and disintegrate into black smoke. Graves stops his assault as he sees the Obscurus flying out from the tunnel. The security director drops to his knees and watches as it looms over him.
Credence.
As it strikes, both he and Newt disapparate out of the way. The Englishman reappears in his path on the platform, then immediately disapparates again behind a column. Graves watches the destructive cloud tear around him, then expand to flood the entire subway station. Both wizards disapparate out of the way. Outside, the Obscurus erupts from a concrete slab. The bystanders see it expanding and contracting in the sky. It dives back down at Graves, standing underground, but he disapparates just before a torrent of debris comes raining in. Newt and Graves cower on the tracks.
Credence, no!
As Tina runs in from the tunnel, the wraith-like Obscurus slows its cyclonic spinning.
Don't do this. Please.
Keep talking, Tina. Keep talking to him. He'll listen to you. He's listening.
I know what that woman did to you.
Credence's anguished face appears in the dark cloud.
I know that you've suffered. You need to stop this now. Newt and I will protect you. This man, he's using you.
Don't listen to her, Credence. I want you to be free. It's all right.
That's it.
Auras arrive from the stairs and tunnel.
You're frightened!
One's down!
Anyone harms him, they answer to me! Credence!
Credence?
The auras blast at the Obscurus.
No!
Pinpoints of light break through Credence's smoky gray body at its core. Outside, the shimmering dome begins to burn away. Shaw Sr. stands firm while others cower behind him. Below ground, blasts of magical energy continue to bombard the Obscurus until it explodes into floating, bat-like shreds of black smoke. Down on the train tracks, Newt props himself up on one knee. He and Tina watch mournfully as Graves climbs up some debris to the swirling remnants of the Obscurial.
You fools.
He faces the Aurors.
Do you realize what you've done?
The Obscurial was killed on my orders, Mr. Graves.
Yes. And history will surely note that, Madam President. What was done here tonight was not right.
He was responsible for the death of a nomad. He risked the exposure of our community. He has broken one of our most sacred laws.
A law that has us scuttling like rats in the gutter.
A law that demands that we conceal our true nature. A law that directs those under its dominion to cower in fear lest we risk discovery.
I ask you, Madam President. I ask all of you. Who does this law protect? Us?
He points upward.
Or them?
He shakes his head and lowers his arm. President Pickwery and the Aurors are unmoved.
I refuse to bow down any longer.
Aurors? I'd like you to relieve Mr. Graves of his wand and escort him back.
As he begins to walk away, a glowing force field appears in his path. With a sneer, he shifts his eyes from side to side, then gives a decisive nod and turns back around to face his opposition. President Pickwery holds him in her steely gaze. With a wave of his wand, the force field clears away and he parries an onslaught of spells from the Aurors. Striking back, he knocks a few of them down. Newt unleashes his swooping evil. With Graves distracted, Newt lashes his hands behind his back with a root-like rope.
Achoo!
The swooping evil flies back into Tina's hand in cocoon form. Veiny branches from the rope hold fast to Graves' overcoat. Newt points his wand.
Revelio.
He twists the glowing wisp emanating from the tip. Newt and Tina move closer. Graves' dark hair becomes white blonde, and his face changes shape. Newt steps in front of him for a better look. The man before him has pasty white skin and a thin mustache. President Pickwery steps over to confront the kneeling captive.
Do you think you can hold me?
We'll do our best, Mr. Grindelwald.
Two auras yank him to his feet. He keeps his malicious gaze on the Makusa president as they drag him away. Newt stands by the stairs with his head lowered. Pausing beside him, Grindelwald looks him over with two eerily different colored eyes. Newt calmly meets his gaze.
Will we die just a little?
Grindelwald smirks as the auras drag him upstairs. Newt watches him go with a quizzical stare. Queenie walks up with Jacob and gives her sister a hug.
I figured somebody ought to keep an eye on this thing.
He returns the suitcase of magical creatures to Newt.
Thank you.
We owe you an apology, Mr. Commander. But the magical community is exposed. We cannot obliviate an entire city.
He watches a scrap of Credence's Obscurus float away through the opening in the ceiling.
Actually, I think we can.
Everyone looks to him. Now, his suitcase lies open amid the debris on the floor. Frank the Thunderbird soars out of it. The witches and wizards recoil as the large avian creature flaps his multiple pairs of feathered wings, which shimmer with golden light. Touching down on the ground, Frank bows his crested eagle-shaped head to Newt.
I was intending to wait until we got to Arizona. But it seems like now you're our only hope, Frank.
The Thunderbird studies him, his yellow eyes slit down the center with large black pupils. Newt strokes his feathered chin and nuzzles him along the top of his sharply hooked beak. The others look on warmly.
I'll miss you too.
Frank lifts his regal head. Newt holds up a vial of the Swooping Evil's glowing blue venom.
You know what you got to do.
Frank cocks his head. Newt throws the vial into the air. Catching it in his beak, Frank flies out through the break in the ceiling. The people on the street fearfully back away. Underground, Tina and the others move closer to the broken ceiling for a better look outside. Frank soars into the clouds, his broad, flapping wings generating lightning. Thunderclouds roll in over Manhattan, swirling in the sky. A bolt of lightning hits the vial in Frank's beak, and a pulse of blue energy radiates across the cloud range above the city's rooftops. Rain pours on the gathered crowd of nomadges, which starts to disperse. The trench-coated aurors quickly set to work with their wands in repairing the damaged streets and automobiles. Eyes closed, Langdon lowers his rain-soaked head. The police officers put away their weapons. In a kitchen with her family, a young mother takes a drink of water, and a look of calm washes over her as chunks of debris fly back into place outside their windows. Warped street lamps straighten themselves out, and an elevated train trestle rebuilds on its own. In a bathroom, Mr. Bingley's wife brushes her teeth very slowly, while the banker stands nearly catatonic as he showers behind her. Frank flies over the city, swooping past a water tower being restored on a rooftop. An auror moves down a block, swinging his arms like a symphony conductor as he compels the buildings to reconstruct. Blown by the wind, newspapers fly back into place on a newsstand. The headline, "Destruction in Times Square, Magical Creature Wreaks Havoc," changes to, "Unusual Weather Pattern Strikes New York, Wettest November in Living Memory." Frank flies past a partially built skyscraper. Construction cranes and equipment rise up into place, and steel beams straighten themselves out as an auror walks down the center of the highest girder, working his magic. Frank soars off toward the sun. His two long tail feathers trail after him like streamers. At the City Hall subway station, Queenie and Jacob watch as pipework and slabs of reinforced concrete plug the hole in the ceiling. Newt stands with the others.
They won't remember anything.
That venom has incredibly powerful obliviative properties.
You regret it, Mr. Scamander.
The station's lights return to full power.
Now, get that case out of New York.
Yes, Madam President.
She starts to leave with her contingent of aurors, then turns back halfway.
Is that Nomad still here?
Jacob steps out sheepishly from behind Queenie along the wall.
Obliviate him. There can be no exceptions. I'm sorry, but even one witness, you know the law.
The Nomad rocks on his feet with an acerbic smile.
I'll let you say goodbye.
She continues out with her security. The four friends trudge upstairs to the rain-battered subway entrance. As Jacob reaches the top, Queenie reaches out and stops him.
Hey. This is for the best. Yeah, I was never even supposed to be here. I was never supposed to know any of this.
He gives a resigned nod.
Everybody knows Newt only kept me around because... Hey, Newt, why did you keep me around?
Because I like you. Because you're my friend. And I'll never forget how you helped me, Jacob.
Oh.
Queenie steps up to him.
I'll come with you. We'll go somewhere. We'll go anywhere. See, I ain't never gonna find anyone like you.
This load's like me.
No. There's only one like you.
His eyes filled with tears, he cocks his head and flashes her a sad smile, then takes a breath.
I gotta go.
He turns away from her, wiping the tears from his eyes.
Jacob.
It's okay. It's okay.
He straightens the lapels of his suit coat.
It's just like waking up, right?
He and Queenie share an emotional smile. Walking backwards, Jacob steps out into the rain. Newt and Tina crowding close to Queenie as she raises her wand. Tipping his head back toward the sky, Jacob closes his eyes and lets the rain beat down on him. Queenie takes a step forward with a sigh. A transparent umbrella stems from her wand as she moves out into the rain and lays her hand on Jacob's cheek. Keeping his eyes shut, he levels his head to face hers. She rubs his lips with her thumb, then gives him a long, slow kiss. Newt sniffles as he watches them together. Tina studies him out of the corner of her eye. Queenie finishes her kiss and softly backs away from Jacob, whose eyes remain closed and his lips puckered. She recedes entirely from view, leaving his hands outstretched toward nothing while he gets soaked in the rain. The side of his neck still bears the bite marks from the Mertlap. His eyes open to find the sheltered subway entrance lying vacant in front of him. He blinks disorientedly. Turning around, he scans the neighborhood and lets his outstretched hands drop back to his sides. He takes another glance down the subway entrance. His head turns distractedly. Then he shuts his gaping mouth, runs a hand down his face, and brushes back his wet hair as he eyes pedestrians going about their business. He slips his hands into the pockets of his suit coat and totters off toward the street, pausing to let a man with a briefcase trudge by. On another day, arched signage over a gate reads, Morton Dale, carrying his leather case, Jacob comes out amongst a crush of factory workers, his pace a little slower than the others. Newt bumps into him.
Oh, sorry.
Jacob sets down his case.
Hey!
He watches Newt disappear among the workers. Going to pick his case back up, he finds it too heavy. He tries again, to no avail, then looks around with a faint, disbelieving smirk. He opens the lid.
Dear Mr. Kowalski, you are wasted in a canning factory.
Jacob takes out a note and stands back up.
Please take these Occamy eggshells as collateral for your bakery. A well-wisher.
The baker looks up, slack-jawed. Now, Newt makes his way through a crowd, his leather suitcase bound shut with twine. Tina walks with him in the cruise ship boarding area. As he turns to face her, they each let out a shy chuckle. Behind him, lettering on a gangway reads, Royal Star Steam Company.
It's been,
Hasn't it?
Newt shifts awkwardly on his feet.
Listen, Newt, I wanted to thank you.
What on earth for?
Well, you know. If you hadn't said all those nice things to Madame Pickery about me, I wouldn't be back on the investigative team now.
Well, I can't think of anyone that I'd rather have investigating me.
Try not to need investigating for a bit.
I will. Now, quiet life for me from now on. Back to the ministry. Deliver my manuscript.
I'll look out for it. Fantastic beasts and where to find them.
She smiles at him, and their eyes meet. Her expression grows a bit melancholy.
Does Leta Lestrange like to read?
Who?
The girl whose picture you carry.
I don't really know what Leta likes these days.
Oh.
Because people change.
Yes.
I've changed. I think. Maybe a little.
His eyes timidly look away for a moment. He glances back at his ship.
I'll send you a copy of my book, if I may.
I'd like that.
He brushes a lock of her wavy brown hair back behind her ear. Her eyes glisten. She smiles softly. Newt abruptly turns and heads for the gangway. Lowering her disappointed gaze, Tina fingers the lock of hair that he touched.
I'm so sorry. How would you feel if I gave you your copy in person?
Bouncing on her heels, she beams at him.
I like that. Very much.
Newt wears a relieved smile. She watches him fondly as he heads up the now empty gangway and pauses halfway. Tina remains on the dock, with a smile on her face. Newt continues up the gangway without looking back, and a porter tips his hat to him as he boards the ship. Still beaming, Tina slips her hands into the pockets of her overcoat and lets out a sigh. Tapping her toes, she pivots on her heels and heads across the now empty dock with a spring in her step. She looks back one last time at the ship. Near an intersection of Orchard Street, a horse and buggy crosses paths on the road with an automobile along a crowded block of shops and apartments. People line up outside a storefront marked Kowalski Fancy Confections Fresh Bread. A delivery vehicle parked out front bears a logo for Kowalski Quality Baked Goods. A help wanted sign is posted in one of the shop's windows, and a sign in the door reads, "Come in, we're open." Baked goods are shaped like demiguises, nifflers, and graphorns. A female customer admires the treats on display in a glass case.
Where'd you get your ideas from, Mr. Kowalski?
I don't know.
He rings up her order.
They just come. Here you go. Forget this. Enjoy. Hey, Hendry. Storage, all right? Thanks, pal.
He gives a key to his employee. Jacob sees Queenie browsing his loaves of bread. She approaches him with a tentative smile. His mouth hangs agape, while his eyes blink in befuddlement. A sunny smile lights up Queenie's face as she stands before him. Knitting his brow, Jacob touches the side of his neck where he was bitten by the Mertlap. The corners of his mouth turn upward in a grin. Cut to black. Titles appear in wisps of vapor before a rough, patchy surface resembling that of a pine cone. Directed by David Yates. Written by J.K. Rowling. Produced by David Heyman, PGA. Produced by J.K. Rowling, PGA. The background changes to a close-up of a feather, its soft fibers angled upward in a uniform direction from its stiff center mane. Produced by Steve Cloves, PGA. Produced by Lionel Wigram, PGA. Executive producer, Tim Lewis. Executive producers, Neil Blair, Rick Sennett. The background changes into a tuft of downy feathers. Director of photography, Philippe Rousselot, AFC, ASC. Production designer, Stuart Craig. Edited by Mark Day. Music by James Newton Howard. The background becomes a surface of scales. Visual effects supervisors, Tim Burke, Christian Mance. Costume designer, Colleen Atwood. Casting by Fiona Weir. The background becomes a thick plumage of feathers. Eddie Redmayne. Catherine Waterston. Dan Fogler. Allison Soodle. The background changes to a different view of feathers splayed like flower petals. Ezra Miller. Samantha Morton. John Voigt. Carmen Ijogo. The background changes back to the pinecone-like surface. Ron Perlman. And Colin Farrell. A Warner Brothers Pictures presentation. A Heyday Films production. A David Yates film. The picture fades to black and more credits roll. American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. No person or entity associated with this film received payment or anything of value or entered into any agreement in connection with the depiction of tobacco products. Copyright 2016, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc., all rights reserved. This motion picture is protected under the copyright laws of the United States and other countries throughout the world. Country of first publication, United States of America. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or copying of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This film has been described by Deluxe, with funding by Warner Brothers Pictures, voiced by Aaron Mazza. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company.